My feminism was born in early childhood, sparked by witnessing my mother's vulnerability after my father abandoned us in Peru. Returning to my grandparents' home in Chile, I observed how my beautiful young mother had no marketable skills, no money, no freedom, and faced constant gossip for being separated. This ignited my lifelong rage against machismo and passion for justice. While my brothers could run wild, start fights, and talk back, behaviors celebrated as natural masculine spirit, my similar actions were deemed dangerous. By age 6, I was expelled from Catholic school for questioning why girls couldn't be altar servers, a pattern of challenging authority that would define my life. My grandfather Augustine, though a traditional patriarch, surprisingly understood women's disadvantages. During our walks through Santiago's parks, he taught me self-reliance. Be independent because no one else will fight your battles. He instilled his stoic philosophy: avoid ostentation, don't complain, help others without boasting. My mother Panchita, scarred by her experiences, warned that my feminist ideas would prevent marriage, repeating, "Men don't like women who think too much." While she believed the patriarchal world was unchangeable, my reading convinced me humanity evolves through struggle. I identified with the transitional generation between mothers and daughters that propelled feminism forward. We refused to accept our mother's resignation. In 1967, I joined Paula, a new feminist magazine, alongside three other young women determined to challenge Chilean prudery. I found my voice writing a weekly column called Civilize Your Troglodyte that used humor to mock machismo. The column resonated with women who saw their daily frustrations reflected in my words, and for the first time, I felt truly myself. At Paula, we tackled taboo topics, from women's sexuality to discriminatory laws, domestic violence to female infidelity. We wrote with fierce determination, refusing to compromise our message. With youthful conviction, we believed we could transform society in 15 years. Though much remains undone, I still believe in that possibility decades later. Despite my feminist convictions, I wasn't immune to my generation's fear of spinsterhood. I married Miguel at 20, balancing my emerging identity with traditional expectations. While I loved my family deeply and maintained a proper home, I carried a burning restlessness inside. Those years were happy, but the intellectual isolation left me feeling my brain was turning into noodle soup. A woman's value worldwide is tied to youth and beauty, a burden most barely survive. For 50 years, I saw myself as unattractive, comparing myself to gorgeous colleagues. The market-enforced beauty standards sell products by exploiting our insecurities. Only age or tragedy, like my daughter's death, frees us from this objectification. I inherited my mother's vanity but concealed it, avoiding my grandfather's mockery. When he ridiculed my highlighted hair at 23, I learned to disregard his opinions. Since then, I've embraced vanity as pleasure rather than sin. Unlike my naturally beautiful mother, Panchita, my vanity requires work, early mornings applying makeup to transform my defeated boxer face. Age has transformed my view of sensuality. The passionate eroticism that inspired Aphrodite at 56 has evolved. Now, sensuality means simple pleasures, a long shower before watching TV with my husband between clean sheets. Meanwhile, patriarchal traditions still control women's sexuality through outdated customs and restrictions, fearing female sexual autonomy. After divorcing Willie after 28 years, I dismissed the idea of remarriage. Starting over with an aging partner seemed daunting. Friends suggested online dating, but I could barely navigate Amazon. I imagined my candid personal ad: 73-year-old grandmother, Latina immigrant, feminist, short with no domestic skills, seeks clean, well-mannered companion for dining and movies. Senior dating proved challenging. Older men sought much younger women, while society frowned on older women dating younger men. Dating websites revealed deceptive profiles and predators targeting widows. My research uncovered stories of catfishing and financial exploitation that left elderly women devastated. In May 2016, Roger, a widowed New York lawyer, contacted me after hearing my radio interview. His daily letters revealed intelligence and progressive values. When we met, I was direct. I am 74, and I don't have time to waste on games. Though initially reluctant to marry, after Roger moved to California and we spent 2 years together, we wed in a small family ceremony. Love makes me feel decades younger, though I've learned to accept my limitations without surrendering to them. I do less now, taking longer for tasks and avoiding extensive travel and large gatherings. Age brings losses: people, pets, places, and vitality. Where I once could multitask and write for 10 hours on minimal sleep, now I focus solely on writing and manage 4 or 5 hours with coffee and determination. Despite humanity's eternal quest for youth and today's anti-aging resources, extended longevity doesn't guarantee quality of life. We live 30 years longer than our grandparents did, yet the pursuit continues. My role model is Olga Murray. At 94, she needs no glasses or hearing aids, drives, and wears vibrant colors. After breaking her ankle in Nepal, she witnessed child trafficking and founded the Nepal Youth Foundation, rescuing 15,000 girls from domestic bondage and transforming Nepal's culture. Connection between women represents what Adrienne Rich called the most feared and potentially most transforming force on the planet. Since ancient times, women have gathered to share stories and support, yet millions remain isolated in their homes today. In Kenya's Kibisim village, I met Esther Odhiambo, who returned to find her community devastated by AIDS. We discovered women gathered to cook, sew, and learn together, their cooperative supporting 50 families affected by the epidemic. Despite losses, they laughed and sang. As Esther noted, when women are together, they get happy. These circles become spaces of healing and quiet revolution. Economic independence forms feminism's foundation. Women need income streams and financial literacy through education and vocational training. Globally, 2/3 of illiterate people are women, and even educated women earn less for equal work, while female-dominated occupations remain undervalued. Rebecca Solnit notes that feminism seeks to transform deeply rooted cultural patterns worldwide. While recent progress is remarkable, we continue advancing and retreating, celebrating victories while navigating setbacks in dismantling patriarchal systems. I'm hopeful because young people share our urgency. They see inherited inequality, environmental damage, and discrimination. Our core mission remains dismantling patriarchy, that ancient system elevating masculine values while suppressing half of humanity. My daughter once dismissed feminism as dated until she entered the workforce and embraced feminist ideas. Though she's gone now, I know she would have celebrated today's creative young feminists and their refreshing spirit. This is a happy time, happiness being quiet and calm, rooted in self-love. Old age is a gift. My mind remains sharp, free from self-doubt and unnecessary complexes. I've embraced simplicity, fewer possessions, deeper friendships, and welcome silence. In our crisis-transformed world, we recognize that love matters most.